Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:18 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiaoning. Earlier this week, the World Bank released its June 2022 Malaysia Economic Monitor Report and noted that the impact of rising interest rates in the U.S. is expected to be less severe for Malaysia compared to other East Asia and Pacific countries.
And that's due to our flexible exchange rate and large international reserves. Apart from that, the report noted that the economic recovery for Malaysia is promising as the economy is opening up and with higher also enjoying higher commodity prices, excuse me. However, it did warn that Malaysia's narrowing fiscal space limits the government's ability to cushion the impact of any new negative shocks.
So for more insights from the report, we have with us Dr. Apoorva Sanghi, lead economist for Malaysia at the World Bank. Good morning, Dr. Apoorva. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, expectations of the U.S. slipping into recession looks highly likely as global inflationary pressures continue. How resilient is the Malaysian economy towards this?
It is true that financial tightening shocks that emanate from the U.S. do have negative spillovers to output in the broader East Asia region, not just Malaysia, but also including Malaysia and other countries. You know, but in our assessment, Malaysia has several factors that go in its favor that tend to reduce the severity of such shocks. So what are these factors? So first is Malaysia's flexible exchange rate. So a flexible ringgit serves as an excellent shock absorber to external shocks. Second is Malaysia's low US dollar-denominated external debt, which is less than 1% of GDP. Third, Malaysia has large international reserves, almost 6 months of import cover. And fourth, that Malaysia has a deep domestic institutional investor base. Plus, Malaysia's recovery prospects in the near term are promising with the economy opening up and at higher commodity prices. So for these reasons, we believe that financial tightening shocks, again, coming from the US, could have an adverse impact on Malaysia, but not as severe.
Yeah, but the government continues to use subsidies to mitigate price increases. So what kind of fiscal strain does it actually have on the government coffers at this juncture? And can the government actually afford to keep this up for the short to medium term?
So subsidy spending in Malaysia, you can categorize it in four dimensions. So energy, food, agriculture related, and others. So of these, the first two, energy and food subsidies, are blanket subsidies, while the others are targeted towards specific groups. So example, farmers when it comes to agricultural subsidies. Now, it is worth pointing out that blanket subsidies are regressive because the benefits are enjoyed disproportionately by richer households. It's also worth noting that the bulk of subsidy and social spending is on blanket fuel subsidies, which alone amount to about 58% of total social spending. So it's quite clear that subsidies are a growing fiscal strain, and clearly there is a need to rationalize them. But there is one other reason to reform subsidies that goes beyond fiscal, and that is that distort price signals and blunt incentives for more production, as well as for consumers to adapt to alternatives. So take subsidies towards rice, for example. The bulk of agricultural subsidies goes towards rice. Yet, rice production has fallen, even as Malaysian households spend three times more on fruits and vegetables and more than twice on bread and cereals. So on fuel subsidies, it is worth noting that Malaysia needs macro and sectoral reforms. So at the macroeconomy level, the government could in place a fiscal rule. So when oil prices are above a certain predetermined threshold, the surplus gets saved. And when it is below, you can spend on some pre-agreed items. So many commodity exporters like Norway and Chile have such a rule. And in terms of sectoral reforms, the energy sector can be made more efficient too. For example, by allowing prices to better reflect costs and containing cross subsidies from industry to residential customers. The subsidies are a growing fiscal strain. They also blunt incentives for more efficient production and consumption.
So apart from subsidies, how else can the government balance between increasing revenues, spending efficiently, and ensuring sufficient social protection for lower income groups?
So social protection has emerged as a clear priority for the government and obviously for Malaysians. In our last high-frequency survey in November of last year, we found that food insecurity remains high. About 17% of low-income households suffered from food insecurity. Nearly a quarter of such households did not have access to cash transfers. So the government, of course, is working on these issues and is implementing something called the PDPS, which is an integrated database, which should help. And for that, there needs to be more fiscal space, which has been shrinking. Both the deficit and debt have been growing from a high of 21% of GDP in 2012, just 10 years back. Malaysia's revenue today is projected to be just 14.3% of GDP, an almost 7 percentage point drop in just 10 years, again shrinking the fiscal space. So there's a clear need for spending better and increasing revenues. The question is when and how? Now, these are complicated questions because just take when. The trade-off is that if you consolidate too quickly, that could undermine recovery and growth. And if you consolidate slowly, that increases fiscal sustainability risk. So in the report that we just launched, we present new analysis that sheds light on these two important questions. And the upshot is that on the when, our recommendation is that consolidation should proceed only once the output gap is closed. And our latest estimate is that the gap will not close in 2022. So in other words, the consolidation needs to be gradual. And on the how, it's about striking a balance between both raising revenues, for example, through the GST and other means, while increasing efficiency of existing expenditures. So the passage of a well-designed Fiscal Responsibility Act, it sets in motion a medium-term fiscal consolidation path, becomes even more important.
Doc, let's look ahead, and I want to know, what do you think the key headwinds might be to dampen the World Bank projection of Malaysia's GDP then? I think you're forecasting 5.5% this year, 4.5% in 2023, and 4.4% in 2024.
So on the global front, the uncertain nature of the war in Ukraine means spillovers to global growth may continue, and concerns of stagflation, which is lower growth, high inflation around the world, rise. Then there is a risk that renewed outbreaks of COVID in China may prompt the Chinese government to impose stricter lockdowns across the country in line with the zero COVID policy. And as we discussed earlier, there's a risk of more and steeper interest rate increases by the US Fed. So on the global front, on the external front, if all these materialize, then that could reduce global growth and adversely affect external demand for Malaysia's exports. Now, on the domestic front, the first is fiscal. Further increases in the subsidy bill or narrowing of the fiscal space is a risk that would undermine investments in social protection. And then there are health risks. So one cannot rule out that a domestic resurgence of COVID-19 or some variant may become an issue as immunity from vaccines wears off. So this needs to be monitored and managed. And there is a risk that vulnerability in households, especially those who have high debt. Then the third bucket is some risks that do not get captured as much. There's a broader risk of fragmentation. Fragmentation in global trade, fragmentation of financial systems, even fragmentation in reserve currencies. The second risk that doesn't get captured as much is on the domestic front is the risk of a two-track recovery, spatially speaking. So where populations in lagging states get even further left behind. And then there's a risk of scarring. So the unknown extent of pandemic-related scarring, the multiplicative impact of crisis after crisis on Malaysia's longer-term growth potential, which is already low because of the declining private investments. So that risk remains. So it's also worth pointing out that growth in Malaysia is currently driven by private consumption rather than investment. So this kind of growth is fragile because shocks to domestic demand can delay growth process.
Finally, in terms of economic reform, what do you think the government should prioritize?
So the short term is to continue targeting of vulnerable groups to help them address issues of things such as food insecurity and so on and so forth. In the medium term, it's about fiscal consolidation and passage of the Fiscal Responsibility Act and boost private investment. And in the long term is to address this issue of populations in lagging states that risk get left even further behind and to address the impact of pandemic-related scarring on Malaysia's human capital in particular.
Thanks so much for your time. That was Dr. Apoorva Sanghi, lead economist for Malaysia at the World Bank, giving us some insights from the latest Malaysia Economic Monitor that was released earlier this week. A lot of things that need to be, I suppose, juggled as we face volatile times in the economy.
Yeah, but one thing is critical, and that is we need to have that fiscal reform in order to put the country in better shape to ensure that we have the sustainability to weather another crisis, because a lot of savings have been depleted, not only government savings, but also individual savings. So how do we rebuild this while looking at some of the gaps that COVID-19 has shown a light on, one of which, of course, is the lack of social protection? I think that's continuing to be a key factor that we must consider. But when he went through all the lists of risks out there, I got really nervous about the world economy and even Malaysia. We're in a very vulnerable place. It's almost like a perfect storm, and we've just come out of one crisis. Are we going to head into another one?
I think that's the question on everyone's mind. And I mean, he mentioned the short and medium term policies that need to be looked at. In the short term, it's really ensuring that vulnerable groups get the targeted assistance they need. But at the same time, the government also needs to look at its fiscal responsibilities and fiscal mechanisms, and also boost private investment,
yes,
which he says is pretty low. I mean, our economy is still driven by consumption, by private consumption, when it's really investment that needs to be ramped up in order to provide that stability.
Yeah, the data shows that private consumption by a lot of companies actually has been on a declining trend. So then how do we make Malaysia that investment destination, not only just for foreigners, but also for locals?
7:29 in the morning. Up next, crypto markets are cratering. What gives? We're going to discuss this. That's happening after the 7:30 news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.